Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
We're going to return now to Donald Trump and the United States, where the president gave a lengthy speech to Congress last night, during which he spoke about his achievements during his first 6 weeks in office. And he was repeatedly heckled by Democrats and cheered by Republicans. Well, Jared Baker, editor-at-large at the Wall Street Journal, is on the line now from New York. And Jared, we're very glad to have you with us this morning. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
So Donald Trump got his letter from President Zelensky, and we want to start here. He mentioned this during the speech last night, and Donald Trump ultimately got what he wanted, didn't he? Access to Ukraine's mineral assets. So in your view and from your perspective, will the American people think now, well, the end justifies the means? I mean, the interaction wasn't pretty with Zelensky, but from Donald Trump's perspective, the aim was achieved.
Yes, you know, it's an interesting, it's been an interesting few days, obviously, on that front. I mean, of course, Zelensky was, of course, willing to sign that that deal even after that extraordinary bust-up in the Oval Office on Friday. They were supposed to sign it, but he was, of course, kicked out of the White House, and the meeting broke up rather dramatically. So, yeah, there's no question that, you know, Trump has got that deal. I'm not sure, and if you look at the details of, no one quite knows exactly how much this is actually worth for the United States. If you look at the details of the deal, it will give them, you know, access supposedly to these minerals. I don't think that amounts to very much in financial terms, even over a long period of time. The question, of course, really is what Trump has always portrayed this as a first step towards peace. Trump's made the argument that the fact the United States has an economic interest in Ukraine provides, in a way, a kind of an implicit, if not a guarantee, an implicit reassurance to the Ukraine that that would keep its territory intact, because if there are Americans there, if American miners are there, if there are people working there, then it's unlikely that Vladimir Putin would invade again and risk a confrontation with the United States. That, of course, you know, that's Trump's view. There's something to it, but it's, of course, is not as good as a real actual security guarantee with military commitment by the United States or by European allies in the event of another attack by Putin. So, look, it is at least, the show is back on the road in some form at least. There will presumably be some kind of a signing again. Maybe Zelensky will come back over to Washington and we'll see how it goes from there. But I think the uncertainties about what exactly any sort of a ceasefire, any kind of a truce, what kind of a settlement might finally be done, those uncertainties haven't really been mm-hmm. removed at all.
And I'm just intrigued to get your take on the American view of Donald Trump and what he is doing, because, you know, here in Europe, people are quite shocked about, you know, proposing Gaza be turned into a luxury resort, humiliating Zelensky, apparently siding with Vladimir Putin. How do you think Americans perceive his approach to foreign policy?
Americans are very divided over this. Certainly the reaction hasn't been as hostile as it is. I've seen the reaction in Europe. Obviously, it hasn't been as hostile as it is there. The Trump supporters think that this is Trump being standing up for America, being tough. There is a fair amount of, I would say, impatience with Volodymyr Zelensky. There's not a lot of this, even outside Donald Trump's own particular wing of the Republican Party. There's certainly no enthusiasm for Vladimir Putin, and there remains considerable sympathy for Zelensky. But what is true is that there's very little appetite anymore, and this is pretty widely felt across the political spectrum, for any significant American contribution anymore to Ukraine. There's a sense that this war has been going on for 3 years. It's unwinnable. America's got other obligations, other responsibilities. It can't keep spending $150 billion or whatever it is. So even though I think a lot of people were somewhat taken aback by the way he behaved, and as you said, this is typical Trump, whether he's talking about acquiring Greenland or Gaza or anything else, there is definitely support here for bringing this war to an end in some way, and even if that involves doing it in rather unorthodox ways. I think what's interesting, Claire, is that there is within the Republican Party, and especially within Trump's own administration, there are definitely differences. It does really seem as though Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance genuinely are very pro-Putin. They want, for whatever reason, they want kind of a world in which the United States and Russia gets on. They want to, they see Putin as a partner in a kind of great power world. There's, within the Republican Party, within the within some of the most important figures in the Republican administration, the foreign policy side, there's still that view is not shared. There's whether it's Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, although he's been publicly supportive. You talk to Republicans privately, they were horrified, many of them, by what happened last Friday. They don't like Vladimir Putin. They don't think that a deal with Vladimir Putin of any sort of a deal that strengthens Vladimir Putin is good for the United States. So there's going to be continuing tension within the administration, by the way, and I think that's why you saw last night in his address to Congress, Trump was very careful not to say anything other than the bare minimum, just to say Zelensky had agreed to his deal, but he didn't talk at all to a wider audience about he didn't say repeat any of the things, some of the outrageous things that he said in the last couple of weeks about Zelensky being responsible for the war or being a dictator. Mm-hmm. So there is still within the Republican Party, considerable doubt about whether or not Trump's foreign policy is right. But he is the president. He has the ability to be able to pursue that. But there will be continuing debate within the administration about what's the right approach here.
Like, if there is a strong resistance, even if it's a small resistance within the Republican Party, they're remaining very quiet. I mean, it feels looking on as though they've all pretty much fallen into line.
Yeah, it's true. Look, nobody wants to. Trump's hold over the Republican Party is so extraordinary and so tight that nobody wants to take the risk of crossing him. I've been told that Elon Musk, obviously the man who is pulling a lot of the strings and certainly has access to a lot of the levers of power at the moment. Elon Musk is going around and telling Republican senators, for example, that if they oppose anything Trump wants to do, he will spend whatever it takes in a primary contest against them to get them out of power. So there's fear. As well as respect for Trump's hold over the party, there's a lot of fear among Republicans. But at the same time, Trump, it's always worth remembering, Republicans have the smallest majority possible in the House of Representatives, just a couple of seats, and a very small majority in the Senate, just 53 to 47. And so while Trump will be able to go a long way in what he wants to do, there are some things that Republicans will eventually push back on. And I think an open embrace of Vladimir Putin or an open attempt to genuinely, essentially, bury NATO, and there's been talk about Trump, coming out and saying he wants to pull the United States out of NATO, that would be a bridge too far, even for a Republican Party that has been, mm-hmm. on the whole, as you say, fairly compliant.
And then you have to wonder what will happen if, as a result of the tariffs move, the stock markets continue to fall, inflation begins to rise, because one of the issues that drove his success, of course, was his promise to address the cost of living. And Americans seem to have great faith in his ability to do that. But if that doesn't work out, how much political capital does he have to withstand any increase in the cost of living?
That's the critical point, I think. There, he is vulnerable on this. The fact that prices have risen so much in the last 4 years was one of the main reasons Trump got elected, and he made a big deal out of this during the campaign, obviously. And prices, they are rising at a slower rate. Inflation is less than it was a couple of years ago, but prices are still rising significantly. His tariffs, especially the ones that he just imposed against Canada and Mexico and also China, will undoubtedly have the effect of lifting prices further. The price of a car is likely to increase. So much of Americans like their cars, and when they buy their cars, many of them are made in Canada and Mexico, mm-hmm. and if slapping a 25% tariff is going to raise that price dramatically. The price of food, the head of one of America's largest supermarket chains, Target, just said on Monday that they will immediately start having to raise food prices because they source a lot of their fresh food from Mexico. And Trump's approval rating on the economy is already low. And when he took office, it was a little bit higher just 6 weeks ago. He's now already underwater in the polls on his handling of the economy. I think that's partly because people have not yet seen any improvement in terms of the inflation picture. And Claire, as you say, the other problem is the economy is actually not only are prices high and likely to rise further as a result of these tariffs, the economy is quite weak too. It's been weakening over the last few months. There's, you know, much of this is to do, I think, with concern among businesses about the prospects of tariffs. But consumers are seeing their income squeezed a little bit. There's concerns about whether or not the restriction on immigration will reduce the size of the labor force and therefore make growth much harder because you need a lot of workers to keep growth going. So, yeah, there are real doubts about the economy. And if Trump doesn't deal with that, it won't really matter how much some of the other stuff, which is popular, by the way, what he's done, whether it's on immigration or whether it is on rolling back some of the woke stuff on diversity, equity, inclusion. If the economy weakens at the same time as prices rise, then you can expect that Trump's, as you say, Trump's political capital is going to deplete pretty quickly.
Well, we will all be watching closely to see how it plays out. Thank you very much for being with us. That's the editor-at-large at the Wall Street Journal, Gerard Baker. Coming up next, Adam Maguire on the challenges facing the sportswear giant Nike.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.